Hi everyone, this is Justine Rhodes, your host for Mentally A Badass. This podcast is dedicated to breaking the boundaries surrounding the mental health conversation. The stories you'll hear on this podcast are real, raw, and relatable, and come from people from different backgrounds, because we believe mental health is global and does not discriminate. Welcome to the unfiltered side of the internet. What is up, Mother Duckers? This is Justine, your host of Mentally A Badass. I am super excited to interview a dear friend of mine who is now an author of a new mental health workbook. It is Ian Michael Michelin, is a licensed psychotherapist with a Master of Social Work degree from Fordham University and a Bachelor of the Arts degree from New Jersey City University. Ian specializes in CBT, TF-CBT, DBT, and trauma-informed care with 12 certificates of training in areas relevant to the foundation of his clinical practice. Ian truly believes in the power that all humans have over their own thoughts and their ability to affect the world around them by using their thoughts intentionally. So Ian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And I would just like to take this moment to show my respect and honor for you, because I have seen so much growth in you, Justine, and developing your brand, developing a real impactful, powerful vehicle to really affect mental health and ultimately to inspire people to educate themselves, better their lives, and ultimately share some resources, educational tools, and just knowledge. Like, you're doing the damn thing, and I'm so proud. I'm so proud of you, and I'm beyond grateful that you allowed me to become a member of this podcast. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so sweet, Ian. Oh my goodness. You know, it's the common denominator here. So a lot of my guests do say that it is a vehicle. And I've been hearing that same thing, which makes me happy that this brand is literally my baby and it's my platform. And there's so many things attached to this brand. So I really do appreciate you acknowledging that. But let's get into you, of course. And just like in every Mentally A Badass episode, we like to dive deep into everyone's past, because people's past can have a lot to do of their present self, of course, not the future. So let's get into it, Ian. So I've known you for a very long time, probably since high school?
At least sophomore year of high school. Yes.
Yeah, and I was probably like a senior at that point.
Yes.
But yeah, no. So we've been friends for the longest, and I've seen Ian go through so many phases of his life. And it's just like, we didn't talk for about a couple of years, but it's now we are starting to talk again, and he's a completely different person. So I just want to acknowledge, like, proof right here that there can be changes, you know, with your thoughts, if you really work on, you know, self-development and self-growth. So this is going to be the topic for this whole podcast episode. So this is something you want to hear. Keep on listening. So Ian, can you tell us about the journey that led you to write this mental health workbook?
So my journey began probably 7 or 8 years ago. I had done at least 6 to 7 years of traditional psychotherapy. And when I say traditional psychotherapy, I'm saying talk therapy. Talk therapy in the psychodynamic / psychoanalytic context. So it was more so me venting to a therapist about my problems in my life, what I was going through, my challenges. In high school, I had a sexual identity crisis where I didn't know who I was. I severely lacked self-awareness, and I did not have the emotional bandwidth to really process what I was going through. And ultimately, my parents were supportive of that, of my journey, and they were supportive of my self-discovery, and they allowed me the privilege, because not everyone has the privilege of therapy and of affording therapy. Luckily, I was blessed with good insurance and great supportive parents that put me into therapy with my consent. And it was good at the beginning. I was able to talk about my problems, talk about my hurdles, my trials and tribulations. But ultimately, I just didn't resonate with it. I didn't resonate with the formula. I didn't feel connected to the person that I was sharing with. Now, this therapy has gone even up until a few years ago, and I've tried out multiple therapists. I've tried out different female therapists, male therapists, non-binary therapists, all across the gender and sexuality sexual identity spectrum and sex spectrum. But ultimately, in 2021, I would say after the pandemic, but it was also, I mean, we're still kind of in the pandemic, so it's kind of like at the end of the 2020 COVID-19 fiasco, I just realized my life wasn't going in the direction in which I had wanted it to. I had worked almost my whole life in the film industry as a production assistant on film sets, but I was also writing and directing my own films, my own short films, my own independent films. And I just felt such a lack of support, a lack of emotional support, a lack of community, you know? And so I decided to go within. Instead of looking outside of myself, I looked within and I identified my strengths, my assets, my skills, and I opened up my own spiritual business in 20, tw the end of 2020, the early 2021, which I still run today, which is called Magical Ascension. But in 2021, I discovered shadow work. And shadow work was popularized by psychologist Carl Gustav Jung, but it ultimately predates modern psychology. It goes back into indigenous cultures, Native American cultures and African cultures and ancient European pagans. The shadow is our repressed nature. It's a part of our psyche, a part of our personality, in which we are deeply ashamed of. It possesses our core wounds like shame, guilt, doubt, hate, anger, jealousy, all of the above. And I started my healing journey successfully because, again, the therapy wasn't so successful for me, at the time, But I started with shadow work in 2021. It really allowed me to stop blaming everyone else, take accountability for my own decisions, really look within myself and say, you know what? I'm the problem here. It's not my friends. If anything, I've attracted these people. These people are projections and outward reflections of what I got going on inside of myself. So I had to look deep within, radically accept, which is a part of DBT, radical acceptance, radically accept all of myself, my flaws, my successes, my wins, my strengths, my assets. And then, okay, ultimately, the shadow work was great and it was awesome, but it kind of transitioned into inner child healing. So I kind of through online videos and YouTube is a great educational resource. I discovered attachment theory and the inner child concept of reparenting. And to explain it, which is it's in my book, but to explain it to viewers and to your audience, the inner child, just like the shadow self, isn't a physical person. It's not like a physical thing, but it's a part of our psyche, part of our, I guess you could say, your unconscious psyche. So our inner child was a part of ourselves back in the day who we were at one time, whether we were 5 years old or 12 years old or a teenager. That inner child that never felt loved, that never felt seen, that never felt heard, that never felt validated, that part of myself needed to mature and to know that as my older self, I am here to protect my younger self. And I'm here to validate him and to support him. And even if no one else comprehended his journey or understood his sexual identity, what as it came to be, I was able to really nourish myself and feed my soul through all of that. So again, these are more analytic psychological concepts, but I was doing this in my own house. I was doing this when a lot of us couldn't go out because of COVID. So I was doing this in a more meditative, reflective environment. And then after that journey kind of came and it was amazing and some say that shadow work is never done and the inner child healing is never done. The goal is to always be secure, securely attached in your relationships, which means having an independence of your own confidence, your own ability to love yourself and not be so, needy for love and be too possessive or obsessive with your partners, but also not be too avoidant and detached. Okay. So being a securely attached individual, it goes back to childhood where, you know, you may not have had a secure bond with your parents, and it might not be their fault. It might have just been they were busy with work, you know, or you just had a lot of emotional, mental health complications going on in your own life, or trauma or other things that have gone on. So after I kind of wrapped up my, you know, inner child healing, I had done EMDR. And EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. And EMDR desensitizes you from any traumas that you have experienced in your life. So I highly recommend if any viewers want to try out EMDR, it's a highly reputable, evidence-based treatment plan for people who have PTSD or just have a various host of traumas in their life. So I did EMDR. But again, there's something about all these things where I just felt like there was something missing. There's a kernel missing in all of these treatments. And I decided to, pursue a mental health degree. And that is where I went to Fordham for my master's in social work. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, when you have a master of social work, you can be a licensed psychotherapist. So I said, you know what, if therapy isn't working for me and it's not really my vibe, I'm going to become my own therapist and I'm going to help people in a way that I feel like other therapists are not, you know, meeting those goals, meeting those needs, so as to say. So I got my therapy degree, and in that program, I discovered cognitive behavioral therapy, as we call CBT. And I have done over 200 worksheets of CBT, okay? Over 200 worksheets of CBT, and we call these worksheets thought records. And how it's different than traditional therapy or, you know, traditional healing, right, is that CBT is evidence-based, and ultimately, you know, we could go on another tangent on this, but it really forces you, encourages you, rather, to be objective. You know, you don't know it all. You don't have our nervous system's natural response to stimuli, but emotions and feelings are not facts at the end of the day, you know? And we both could be right in our own way, or we both can be wrong in our own way. And CBT really encourages you to be objective, neutralized, rational, logical. And for a lot of us who have dysregulated nervous systems, or, you know, have a lot of fight or flight, freeze or fawn responses, you know, our amygdala is on overdrive all the time. CBT really regulates us. It allows us to soothe our nervous system. And there's real science that shows that, you know, by changing your thoughts, you really do rewire your brain, your neurochemistry. They have fMRIs that have indicated that CBT and ultimately the tools that I've used in my book are evidence-based to and proven to activate your prefrontal cortex. And your prefrontal cortex controls emotional intelligence, logic, planning, long-term memory, and it turns off your amygdala. And your amygdala is our less evolved mammalian and reptilian brains, limbic system and reptilian brains, which control our fight or flight, freeze or fawn response, anxiety, fear, depression, all of the things that a lot of us suffer with. CBT really changes our brain chemistry. So to kind of bring us to the present moment, to kind of come to a 180 degree, I dove deep into CBT, and then I dove deep into DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy, which is for people with borderline personality disorder, people who have emotional dysregulation, for distress tolerance skills. DBT is the baby of CBT, and I applied all of these skills into my own therapeutic process, a holistic, comprehensive process, and you know, now with this book, which it is called You Hold the Power Within Your Thoughts, I really made sure that I included everything from my healing journey into this book. You know, all of the shadow work, the inner child healing, the attachment style, attachment theory, CBT, DBT, all of it, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, we all have different needs. And a lot of us are trying to force our family, force our friends, force our jobs to give us something that they can't give us. You know, if your parents did not have the emotional intelligence to say, I love you, you're so great, you know, here's a trophy, or, you know, and I'm not trying to minimize anyone's, you know, feelings or reactions, but ultimately, our parents only know what they know, and we learn at home. Learning starts at home. So I had to learn, and I had to wake up one day and realize, you know, my parents did the best they could, and they did an amazing job, and they took the baton, and they ran it down the track field, and they passed it to me, and I took it, and I'm running it all the way around, you know, and each generation, if they do the work, do the inner work, we can really heal our trauma, heal the generational traumas, heal the generational curses that exist epigenetically amongst and addictions. Addictions are, you know, one of the biggest mental health crises in America at the current moment. We have the power to change our thoughts and to change our realities, because even if you can't physically change someone, and you shouldn't want to change anyone, you know, people are who they are. We should accept them as they are and readjust our expectations. But what I have learned, as you have highlighted, Justine, is that, you know, I had the power and I have the power to change myself. And I'm still the same person, but I have so much more self-awareness, so much more insight, so much more emotional intelligence. And I now have individuated, essentially. And I encourage a lot of people to, you know, start their journey. Even if you don't have a journey yet, you don't see a therapist, that's okay. There's other tools out there for you to improve your mental health. And my book is a culmination of over 7 years of my healing journey in one book, in 222 pages.
Awesome. All right. While you were talking this whole time, I wrote down some questions that I feel that my audience can really benefit from. And they're all key things that you've mentioned throughout your whole answer from that question. So I'm trying to think of which one I want to start with. I have a few. So actually, my audience wants to learn more about anxiety. It was number one from that marketing survey. And then you mentioned that your emotions and feelings aren't facts. I 100% agree with that. We can be in our own minds and not realize the reality. So how can someone who has severe anxiety and paranoia, what is your tips for like how to get out of your own mind?
Okay, so reality testing is super important. Reality testing is in my book. It is kind of doing an assessment, okay? And you don't need the book to do that. You could do it on your own. You could do it in your own head, or you can do it with a guided journal. Reality testing is, what are the facts, okay? The key is to always go back to the evidence. Always go back to the facts, okay? So anxiety, in most cases, according to the science, is a physical response to overwhelming feelings, okay? Depression, in most cases, whether, again, there could be clinical reasons where you have a chemical imbalance for depression or anxiety or paranoia, but in most cases, depression is an avoidance of feelings. So you're not feeling your feelings and you're avoiding them and you're using substances or other things to numb the pain. But for anxiety, to back to your point and your question, anxiety is a physical sensation and it looks differently for every person. So if you're having sweaty palms or you're having an elevated heart rate or increased blood pressure or a panic attack, for example, a panic attack is like the worst of the anxiety attacks in most cases. It's the amygdala in your, you know, the part of your brain is perceiving a threat that might not exist, that might not be as bad as it really is. So a lot of people get social anxiety when you go to the bus stop and you see someone staring at you and you think they're judging you and they hate you and all these negative thoughts kind of come into your head, maybe from earlier pre-existing you know, childhood narratives that you have from your trauma, from your childhood wound, your core wounds, it kind of takes over and hijacks your prefrontal cortex. So you're not thinking logically. So what I would say for people who have anxiety and significant paranoia is to do some reality testing. Really sit mindfully. Yes, breathing does help. Breathing is scientifically proven to relax the amygdala, lower your blood pressure, lower your heart rate, and to kind of bring you to a homeostatic state of being, okay? But ultimately, it's more than just breathing. You really do have to, over time, progressively, target those negative core beliefs. And that's why in CBT, we believe in automatic thoughts. We believe in intermediary thoughts, intermediary beliefs, and we believe in negative core beliefs. So sometimes when you think an automatic thought is, oh, this person doesn't like me, okay? That's the automatic thought. Then you have the intermediary thought or belief, okay? And that would be, this person must not like me because I look a certain way, or I talk a certain way, or I act a certain way. And then the real core belief underneath all of that, like a mountain, okay? At the foundation of that is this deeply ingrained, deeply held belief that says, I am unlovable. I am not good enough. I am a terrible person. I'm ugly. I'm this, I'm that, whatever it is for you, whatever your core belief is. Okay. So the real work, you know, to stop your anxiety or to minimize it, because, you know, it might never go away, and that's okay. It might never go away. It's a, you know, a mental health, condition, mental health state of being. And for a lot of people, it doesn't go away. But I will tell you this, from me doing all of those worksheets and from doing the exercises that are in my book, I have significantly minimized my anxiety. And now when I feel a panic attack coming on, where I feel a little bit dissociated, I feel vertigo, I feel a little bit of, you know, where am I? I'm not in my body completely. I can stop myself like with the snap of my finger and say, okay, I am safe. I'm fine. This is my fight or flight system in overdrive. Breathe and just remind myself that I'm going to get through this. I've survived panic attacks before. A lot of the danger is we think we're going to die, or we think we're going to, you know, trigger warning, we're going to die, or going to ultimately have something terrible happen to us. We're losing control, or we're going crazy, but we're not going crazy. We're not losing control. It's just our brain responding to a perceived threat. So the more you do the work on yourself to process those deeply ingrained beliefs and target them with positive thoughts and neutralized thoughts, even if you're not the best student where you get straight A pluses, or even if you're not the fastest runner on a track team, or if you're not, you know, traditionally having the body type that society wants you to have, that's okay. Because you know what? At the end of the day, you are who you are. But what you have to do is really work through those beliefs and those thoughts, and ultimately come to accept yourself completely as you are. And if you want to change your body, you can do whatever you want with your body. If you want to get better grades in school, you can study harder and you can work harder and you can get whatever goal you seek. You know, whatever goal you seek. If you want to be the star track athlete, you can go and, you know, get the mile or get the 50-meter dash and kill it, you know, annihilate the competition. But ultimately, the point of the inner work is that you're not defined by other people. You're defined by however you see yourself and however you want to be, because this is your life. And you do have the power over your thoughts. And our thoughts are just thoughts. Thoughts can be inaccurate. They can be wrong. They can be incorrect. Our feelings can be incorrect. So at the end of the day, you know, the whole point of this is our thoughts affect how we feel, which affects how we behave and how we show up in the world. And if you can correct your thoughts, you will start to feel better, and then you'll be more successful. And that's why the science indicates, and the studies, there's over 2,000 studies of CBT that indicate that it is the gold standard for therapy. It is the gold standard for mental health. And your confidence and your self-esteem will boost at the end of treatment. So you don't need to go to a therapist. That's a choice. I highly recommend you do go to a therapist. But I also recommend trying a cognitive behavioral therapist, again, because they are actually evidence-based. And what they do is proven scientifically to work. And again, my book is a supplementary tool to add to your therapy or to be a tool that will ultimately assist you on your healing journey. And again, it's all adopted from evidence-based formulaic thought records and practices. So yeah.
So a follow-up question that I do have, when you were talking about all of doing the work yourself and knowing how to get out of your own mind and how it, you know, takes a lot of effort. So let's say somebody is, okay, they're going to work on themselves. They do for, let's say, 2 years and they become completely different person, right? How you went from one Ian to a different Ian. You're like Ian 2.0 right now. And I'm like Justine 3.0 right now.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, do people have to do this kind of work up until they're like 80 years old? Or do you feel like, do you think if people stop working on the personal development, they stop reading the books, they stop listening to the podcasts, they stop doing their inner work, do you feel that they can revert back into their their negative beliefs and their mindsets?
Okay, so this is why sticking to the facts is super important. Again, I've adopted the style of this book is thought records. Okay, thought records are a huge part of CBT. And again, it trains your brain to think and respond differently. So as you're saying, life is going to happen. Life is going to happen whether we like it or not. There's always going to be a car crash, a job loss, a breakup, homelessness. You know, in some cases, you get evicted from your apartment or your house. There's always going to be something that happens and something that comes your way. But the resilience, and resilience is an important word in mental health these days especially, but the resilience of getting through any obstacle is what is of vital importance. And I will say that these tools that will be added to your toolkit, your toolbox, you know, the mental tools, the coping skills, right? All of the above. That is what you will carry with you in the future. So to answer your question, the work is really never done. But what I will say is that for me right now, I'm on a plateau. Okay. So I've done a lot of work on myself. There are areas in which I can still improve, and I'm, you know, trying as I'm not trying. I am doing the work. I'm not trying the work. I am doing the work to improve those things and correct those things. But that's life. We're always going to be a work in progress. Like life happens, and life just is thrown our way. And as I stated, you know, trauma is inevitable in the modern world where there's world wars and famine and economic recessions and inflation and, you know, just so much violence and fighting, we kind of become desensitized to all of the above, which I stated. So it's only natural that you're going to have to pull out those tools in your toolkit and in your toolbox to continuously work on yourself. But the hope of all of this, the silver lining of this, is that you'll get to a place with your healing journey where life becomes easier, you know, and now for in my life, you know, I've attracted better friends, better partners who are on my level. And again, we are all on different levels of our healing journey. We're not better than anyone else. I'm not better than anyone else. I'm not worse than anyone else. We're all equal in our humanity. But in terms of our healing journeys, like attracts like. And like Sir Isaac Newton said, every, you know, physical action has an equal but opposite reaction. So it's as simple as physics. We attract what we are, not what we want. So if you're not healed, you will continuously attract unhealed partners, toxic friends, toxic work environments. If you don't respect yourself and you don't love yourself, and again, loving yourself is such a novel, you know, confusing concept, because what does that even mean? But that's why this book, loving yourself could be accepting your flaws. Loving yourself could be identifying your love language or your attachment style or, you know, your strengths and your intelligence. So we all have different intelligence types. So ultimately, the self-awareness that you will take with you on your healing journey, whenever that looks like, whether that's my book or whether it's therapy or just meditation, however you choose to heal is your choice, and it's not wrong. And it's not good. It just is, because, you know, good and evil, right and wrong is morality, and it's subjective, and it's interpreted and defined differently per person and per culture. But ultimately, you are defined however you choose to define yourself, and the work really never stops. But like I said, to circle back, it gets better. It does get better, and now I have much more confidence, self-esteem, much more in tune with my strengths. I'm much more emotionally intelligent. I'm much more socially aware. I care more about other people. I have more empathy. I don't take things as personally. I'm not as triggered all the time. I really don't care about a lot of things, and it's not good or bad. It just is. And that's the point. It makes you more neutralized, that life happens, and ultimately it's your job to do the work and to live your life authentically as you are, not as society or anyone else wants you to be.
Yeah, so everything you just said, of course, I agree with. I want to transition of talking more about, you know, your book. I have it in my hands right now. Yes. And I do have some questions. So I am a customer. I bought your book. I started working on it last night. And some questions when I was going through the book that I actually want to ask, and it may help for people who may potentially purchase, is so there's a lot of content. There's a lot of tables of content on here. And some of them is very specialized. For example, autism, bipolar, schizophrenia. So my question is I'm curious to know the reasoning of adding that content to the book.
Okay, so when I as I've told you, I've done over like maybe even 300 pages of thought records and, you know, psychoeducational material of CBT and DBT, which, as we stated before, is the gold standard of therapy. Like, it is the most evidence-based, it's the most effective, it has a over 50 to 75% effectiveness rate. But, capital B in but, it was lacking for people who have specialized conditions, specialized situations. So people who have autism, people who have, you know, autism spectrum disorders, people who have bipolar disorder, people who have schizophrenia, psychosis, delusional thoughts. All of those, you know, treatment options were lacking for those individuals. So in my life, I have friends who are people, and these people have autism. These people have schizophrenia. These people have psychosis and bipolar disorder. And I just felt like it's not fair, you know, that they don't have enough options for their mental health. You know, most options are medication, you know, psychopharmacology, which works. You know, these things are evidence-based as well, and they work. And I highly recommend them. But in terms of self-help and psychoeducational resources and tools, they were lacking. So what I did with this book, for example, with schizophrenia, I put myself into each person's shoes, okay? I didn't just copy and paste things that I've saw and read. No, every 222 pages of my book, each of those pages are my own creation, my own words, my own research, my own evaluation. So having real experience with people who have schizophrenia, a lot of their delusional thoughts are rooted in trauma. A lot of their hallucinations that they hear, whether it's auditory or visual, you know, auditory being the hearing, you know, they hear voices, okay? And or the visual, you know, a lot of those voices were based on their parents telling them as children, you're not good enough, you are, you know, fat, you are ugly, you are all these horrible things, okay? And I've talked to these people who have these conditions, and it breaks my heart to hear how terrible, you know, their everyday life is. And so this book allows them to assess those voices, assess those hallucinations, assess their condition, okay? And to really take their power back, really, again, do some reality testing. Is this thought accurate to this current situation, or is this coming from a deeper source? For autism, it's a little bit different. It's a lot bit different than schizophrenia and psychosis, where a lot of it is sensory. You know, so they have this, like they're appalled by certain textures and certain sounds and certain colors and certain lights. So what I do in the book safely is ask them, if they expose, and this is what we call exposure therapy, would they be so inclined to expose themselves? Like, if I just touched this cup, will I really die? Will something really bad happen? You know, a lot of these logical, you know, backing. So the book really allows them to explore some of the things and the hindrances in their day-to-day lives in which they're not able to fully live their lives without fear. And for people with bipolar disorder, you know, I have family, I have friends, dear friends, some of my best friends who have bipolar disorder. And, you know, people always just say, oh, just get out of bed, go find something to do. Oh, just sit in the sun. And those are not logical, long-term, tangible things. Now, again, in a lot of these cases, you may need psychopharmacology. So like a mood stabilizer or a antidepressant or a anticonvulsant medication. And that will help you. But in terms of your mental health, in addition to that, finding the motivation within yourself to do those things. And, you know, for bipolar disorder, I made it more empathic. Like, who can you call when you want to vent to talk about your day? You know, even if you have no energy to get out of bed, you don't have energy to get out of bed. Okay, let's start where you are, right? We're starting where you are. If you are at the ground level of your house, your mental house, you can't even get out of bed. You can't even eat, okay? What can you do to get the ball rolling? Can you call someone? Can you reach out for help? Can you try to look at the, you know, at the realistic side of life? You know, not sometimes we kind of encourage in the mental health communities, we kind of encourage toxic positivity. And I'm here to say that life is not positive. Life is real. Life is not positive. So I think we have to learn that sometimes we need tough love and we need a dose of reality every now and again. And this book does not hold back on, like, is this thought real, objective, rational? You know, if I don't have the strength to get up and to do what I need to do, what are some options? You know, what can I journal? Can I make a list of things I need to get done in a day? For people who have ADHD, I have a lot of friends who have ADHD. And again, I always try to put, for every part of the book, you know, there's 73 in total. There's 73 sections of the book with different categories and mental health challenges. I put myself in their perspective, in their shoes. And with people who have ADHD, sometimes they don't realize how they come across. They don't realize, you know, how am I showing up in this conversation? Am I listening? Can I take more time to reflect back to the, if I don't understand what the person is saying, how can I, you know, reflect back to them what I thought I heard, you know, or what they might have heard or what they might have said. So I really tried to apply so many, again, particular things for each particular situation. So we even cover how my book is different than most mental health workbooks is we cover domestic violence. Like, most people are not talking about this. This is not a well-educated, well-versed topic. Narcissism, gaslighting, domestic violence, boundaries, codependency, so much more, you know, feeling, you know, grief. Grief is a huge thing. Everyone, I think, has been touched by death and by loss and by grief. We even talk about suicide and, you know, that trigger warning. We really go through it where, like, why do you want to unalive yourself? You know, you can't get any more mental health than loss. Death and loss. If you don't have life, you have nothing because you're not here. There's no physical person. So we cover suicide because it is something that a lot of the youth in today's culture are experiencing in rapid rates, in rapid progression that we need to assess. And a lot of times, again, I've talked to people who have lost someone to suicide and those who have contemplated suicide themselves, unaliving themselves. Again, trigger warning, this is a sensitive topic. So we go through, you know, am I letting the bullies win if I unalive myself? Am I letting down those people who do love me if I unalive myself? And at the end of it, I say, you know what? Forget about everyone else. This is your life. Why do you want to live? And that's the answer we all have to wake up every day and ask ourselves. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't ultimately matter if this person loves us, this person doesn't love us. If we don't love ourselves, if we don't like our own life and our own, you know, existence on this planet, then ultimately it's within our hands. The decision is within our hands, so within our control. So again, I really go deep and dark, and that's why the book starts off riding high. You know, we talk about your strengths, your skills, your self-esteem, your confidence, your beliefs and values. So again, kind of start the journey on a positive note with, you know, some self-awareness. And as the book progresses, it goes dark into the, as we say in like literature and in psychology and analytic psychology, the dark night of the soul. So where you really go into the trenches of your mental health and really target everything, your trauma. We talk about coercion. We talk about getting out of the trauma cycle because trauma compounds upon trauma. So if you don't learn how to assert your needs and your boundaries and be confident and strong, you may repeat traumas. You may put yourself, it is proven that we do ultimately attract more. Trauma is compounded and it doesn't stop unless we do the work to build ourselves back up. And that's why the middle of the book is the foundation of your house, the foundation, the blueprint of your mental health. And by the end of the book, we take you back to your strengths, just how it started, your skills, your strengths, your assets, your beliefs and values. And this time, you will learn more about yourself than you ever thought was possible. You know, your trauma does not define you. You define you. You know, your trauma, your experiences, they can shape your life. But now you have the power to take control of your thoughts. You hold the power within your thoughts. The power lies within you and within how you correct your thoughts to ultimately change your life and take your power back and create a new life for yourself. And I'm living proof of that. I mean, I've had my own traumas. I've had my own terrible experiences. And by doing the work, I have stopped traumas from happening again to me, in which I put myself in a situation where something terrible could have happened, just like an old trauma that I experienced. And instead, with these tools, I stopped it from happening. I asserted my boundaries and I fought back and I won. And I'm a living testament of you can do the work. You have the power to do whatever you want with your life because this is your life and no one has the power to take that away from you. So be smart. And I highly suggest getting the book, you know, and I'm so grateful, Justine, that you have purchased it and supported me in this journey. But again, we cover everything. That's to answer, go back to your question. This is why this book is interesting and meaningful and significant, because again, I have not seen all of these topics in any other mental health book. And if they have it in the mental health book, is it successful? Have you talked to people who have schizophrenia? Have they had a high success rate with those books? Absolutely not. And I've talked to those individuals. I've done the research. So again, this is definitely 7 years in the making. But again, just like how you said you had questions about the book, everyone might respond differently to it. And that's okay. You know, everyone's journey is different and some things work for them, some things don't. You know, take what resonates and leave the rest. That's what I say. Take what resonates and leave the rest. But ultimately, I'm so proud of you, Justine, for creating this platform and this, you know, brand and other things that we cannot mention yet. But you are ultimately educating so many people, inspiring so many people, giving a public safe place to discuss mental health. And I think that's something that we should all applaud, that you are honestly doing it and you're killing it. You're slaying it. And I'm so proud of you. And I'm so happy that I got to come here today to share this book, because this is my baby. This is my baby. This is my creation. And honestly, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into this book. And again, I'm living proof that we all can have our phoenix rising out of the ashes moment. We all can come out of darkness and into the light. And mental health is the answer. Mental health is the number one crisis around the world. And the more people that do the work, again, whatever works for you, the book, traditional therapy, psychopharmacology, everyone has a different experience and a different journey. But when you do the work, you will see the results. You will see the rewards. And you can follow me on Instagram at Ian Michael Michelin, and I'll take all of your questions and all of your constructive criticism. Thank you.
I must say that you're probably like the first guest that like really led this conversation.
Again,
You
I
should
didn't
just
even
start
touch
your
on
own
my three
podcast
notes.
at this point.
I have
I
three.
feel like that would be so cool for you if you just started your own podcast. Because you have a lot to say, and I feel like there's so much more, of course, that you could say, but we're not going to talk about every little thing of mental health in this one, episode. But
Of
honestly,
course.
for real though, I think you should just like create your own podcast. Like, I
Thank
feel like
you.
you have
Thank
so
you.
much to say. I think that would be great for your particular brand to attach it, because then people will learn more and then of course look up your book. But yes, Ian does have his book on Amazon. And so I will put the link, of course, in that description so you guys can check it out. I'll put his Instagram handle. Feel free to slide into his DMs for questions about mental health. But
Yes.
yeah, so I'm going to end this episode here. I think we've gotten a lot of really good value out of Ian here. And honestly, like, we can get even more. So if you guys do want him back in the podcast, I will put a poll in Spotify. So just let me know and bring him back on. But yeah, thank you, Ian, so much for being on this podcast. Thank you for everyone who was listening. And I hope you guys have a good day or evening, and stay tuned for next episode.
Thank you so much.